Okay, so we have Madam Lorenza here, and she's had a vision. She had big insight yesterday. And she would like to report it to the 50,000 here attending the concert. And
well, yes, like Frank Zappa said, music is the only religion that delivers the goods.
Yeah, great statement. I agree with that.
Because it's the frequency.
Wait a minute. What do you think, Carol? What was what? Carol said something. What was it? Religion is the only religion that delivers the goods.
Music.
And you're wondering what the goods are, Carol?
No, music is the only religion.
Music is the only religion that delivers the goods. All right, you got it. Okay.
Yes, the thing, you know, I've been into these archetypes, the archetype of the path from the darkness to the light. And I'm impressed with Ion because he shows me these things in the Outer Kingdom. Like we saw Beyoncé and the husband, I don't know his name, they went to the Louvre and they did this video, and then there was in the MTV Awards, in the show, a part in which the singer is reenacting The Last Supper
by
Leonardo.
Yeah.
But then in the middle of the table in the place that was supposed to be occupied by Jesus, there is a black woman.
Yeah.
And behind them there was a lot of columns. You know, like all many different columns and big Corinthian columns. And
this was Ariana Grande's video.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Leonardo was very original in his representations of Christian scenes. Like the Holy Family, he will put in caves, in landscapes that look like the area around the convent of Montserrat in Barcelona.
Yeah.
And you know the Myth of the Cave by Plato. He was a Neoplatonist.
Yeah.
But I actually think he was a real parallel world traveler.
Yeah.
And I have the impression he was trying to reconstruct things he saw in what we think is the future, but there is no time. And yes, for me, when I see this, another of the discussions around the Last Supper painted by Leonardo is that he didn't put a halo around the disciples of Jesus and Jesus.
Right.
And in the Bible, they don't mention any woman attending that dinner. And then he painted a very feminine figure that some say is Mary Magdalene. Another says is another character, but it is really like a woman.
Right.
So that was at the time very, very shocking.
Right.
And then in the MTV Awards, they did The Last Supper with only women.
Mm.
But I find it really interesting that they're using these things. We're talking about the food and the non-foods. The non-foods were the different elements of the music of Frank Zappa.
Yes, that was his title of his column, Non-Foods.
Yes, and so I find it really interesting that they do The Last Supper because we are always talking about these substances and the chemistries that are very important in the transformation of the environment and the human body. And since I got into this I've been thinking, what is this loop really about? Because it starts with the black woman,
yeah,
or, you know, the Mona Lisa that represents the darkness. And in that painting, Leonardo made a summary of everything he knew. There is a lot of information about many, many things he knew in the painting. We did a video. It's on Vimeo. You may like to check it out because it's a lot.
What's the title of that video? Do you know?
I don't remember. It's about the Mona Lisa.
Oh, okay.
And so this is the first work of art that Leonardo gives to Frank the First, and it starts a collection of the Louvre that he builds, Francis the First. And then this reproduction of the Temple of Man has now even a particle accelerator. And the, like I said in other programs before, I think last time, in the Louvre is the only museum where they don't do the division between anthropology and art.
Right.
And that's the thing that makes the Louvre collection different from other museums. And that's like very, very important. Because in a way, with this collection, they're showing like a continuity in this evolution of consciousness that some people like William Irving Thompson,
yeah,
are trying to explain, or LaRouche with his history.
Right. That there's no division between art and archaeology.
Yes, and that there is a continuity in this evolution of conscious technology and art of humanity. It's not like one culture is better than others. It's all human. It's all one. And it's very important that this big archive represents a giant human body.
Who?
The Louvre.
Represents like Gaian's body?
A giant.
Oh, a giant body,
human.
Right, yeah.
Body. And yesterday, it's already for me the next day. I was thinking, like, I think it was something Ion puts in my head. how what we used to think is religion is actually science. And some people got it, like the alchemist and Leonardo and Joyce and Marshall McLuhan. And that's why we are not into like a cult or like a New Age type of spirituality. Because we are really exploring the technologies.
Right.
And this is why it is so important to understand Marshall McLuhan and what he was doing really and why he was not ashamed to say he was a Catholic.
Right. Well, yes, while doing artifacts, while doing science.
Yes, he's trying to show that connection, and it's also very revealing that in the Vatican you have in the Sistine Chapel the Adam trying to reach God, and Michelangelo portrayed God. Actually, it's a brain.
Mm.
So Adam is trying to connect actually with his own brain.
Yeah.
So there is again, these things I don't know, is talking about, like the hypothalamus.
Yeah.
And changes in our anatomy that are actually this reconnection with our gut. And LaRouche explains that, like, the creative power of men, that we are the only ones that can, for example, create an element, a substance, a process, technologies that doesn't exist in first nature.
Right.
So that actually humans are affecting the course of the universe. And that he believed that we're going to leave planet Earth. That is like very natural in this process to then explore the universe, other planets.
Yeah, this is LaRouche's idea that creativity is the essence of being human, and being spiritual and being religious is being creative and making new technologies.
Yes, and somehow through Ion or he or Trump is into your chart.
Yeah.
But he announced he's creating the Space Force and that America is going back to the moon and to Mars.
Yeah, Trump did that. That's right.
Yes.
The Space Force. So
he,
you're...
In a way, he's into LaRouche.
Right. Listen to this. No, you're right, because I was talking to a LaRouche woman. She's been in the organization since the 70s. She's very very learned, LaRouche. Been there for 40 years, maybe 50. And she actually, based on a few things I said, she now is taking REMAG and REMITE. This is a LaRouche woman, probably in her early 70s. But she says that LaRouche is kind of popular right now, and when people read his pamphlets and stuff, and he was talking about the Silk Road and the bringing together of America, Russia, China, and India 30 years ago, they're shocked. They're literally shocked. They're saying, this politician was saying this 30 years ago? And these are people who, like, hear about the idea and think it's pretty cool. So,
yeah, but at the time, that seemed somehow crazy, you know, talking about the space and things like that.
He used to put headlines out, the world needs more people. And this is at the time when everybody thought there was a population explosion, and you know, had to be a nut to think there should be more people. But LaRouche was saying that's necessary. To have the growth for us to survive, you need a lot of people who are smart and are making and maintaining the technology that's to be. And this is all being, this is what he defines as being creative. And that's your point. And it's McLuhan's point. We make objects. That's our creativity.
Yes, and this is actually, when we think about it, is really what makes us godlike.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, that will be the only thing that may sound like New Age talk.
Yes.
By Ion. You know, when he says, you are God?
Yeah. But when he starts to define it, what it means to be a God, it sounds like McLuhan and LaRouche.
Can I ask a question?
So,
yeah, go ahead.
The one thing, I'd like to hear your response to this thought about LaRouche's ideas, economic ideas, and that's relative population density. The idea that progress is the ability to sustain more and more people in a smaller and smaller space,
yeah.
Smaller square footage. And that, I don't get that. Why is it necessary to maximize space?
Politics and the ideas of the empire, they're promoting, like in science fiction, ideas like science is dangerous and might get out of control, and that there is too much humans and they have to be eliminated. So LaRue says it's not true that the Earth has not enough resources to sustain a bigger population, and that humans cannot find a solution in technology to sustain them.
The use of technology, Gene.
Yes, the use of technology. But do you think, Bob, that he's is he favoring then urban development over I guess rural? I guess it would be rural development. That an urban environment promotes technology in a way that is useful. It gives me the impression of cramping people into space. But that's because I've always been a country girl.
Hey, Gene. He says the Platonists, the great scientists, were city builders. Think of Solomon. And the rural, keep the people stupid, the oligarchy, you know, run some little feudal enclave with basic, you know, simple technologies. Everybody's starving and no progress except for the oligarch. That's the Jeffersonian plan versus the city builder Hamilton in American culture. So that's a basic point of LaRouche. We need more technology, more people able to live in smaller acres, but you keep expanding the city or you grow many other cities, and more people will have the time to think and to create. So it's actually the way society is in the West now, without all these worries about population explosion or worrying about pollution and technologies.
Yeah,
yes, it's
kind of the way.
LaRouche is basically trying to prevent genocide, because as soon as the thoughts about overpopulation get too manifest, then that allows people to think, well, let's just kill some people off.
Okay. Yes.
You know, so that's number one before then deciding how to do it. But when you travel across the country, as I just did this past month, and see the wide open spaces, there's plenty of room for everybody.
Yes, that's what I mean. That's an item of discomfort for me, because especially with technology and the use of technology, you can be as up to speed anywhere you live. You don't have to be in an urban environment to promote the advancement of technology anymore, I don't think. So I might be too critical.
When you get urban or rural, either one, and you put technology in place, then I think both, you're not going to have farms spread out. You are going to have more condensed housing and all the rest of it.
I get the one.
Hey, Carol, let me say something, Gene. Gene, let me supplement what Carol's saying. You look at LaRouche's designs for the colonies on Mars. He uses Bucky Fuller domes. It's very advanced design, and it's not to create the ghetto or just condensed cities like New York City. You do it intelligently, but you have to have an ideology that technology and making the population smarter is the first priority, not worrying about recycling your garbage or worrying about developing some nuclear plants because that might blow up. All the concerns of the last 40 years under ecology are anti the Hamiltonian program, which is Platonic and Christian, and scientist and spiritual. Yeah.
It's because in science, like, we got to a point where when you listen to some scientists, they sound like gurus, you know, and there are characters like this Haramain, I think is his name, that have theories that, there are some parts of them really sound like New Age talk, but...
Who's Harriman? Who are you thinking of? A guy named Harriman?
Nassim Harriman. Nassim Harriman.
That guy lives here in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Because we have these particles accelerators, and we've seen that particles can be small, even smaller. And actually, in an atom, there is more space than anything else. It's like 99.99 is space. So it's weird.
Yeah, Ian talks about that, Roxy. And this guy, Hermine, he was one of the first people that Ian criticized when we started doing that series with Ed. You look under analysis, you know, the first 11 things we did under A, look up. Ion, listen, Roxy, I want to get it on for the record for the others. Ion destroys the geometrical lectures that Hermine gives. To quote YouTube, they're always saying that some guy destroyed the other guy.
Ion destroys all science, actually.
Old science, real science.
The thing is that even scientists now get to this point where, like in Ricky and Morty.
Rigor Mortis?
Yeah, Ricky and Morty, the cartoon.
Oh, Ricky and Morty, yeah.
Yeah, the things they see cannot be explained in what we call logical way, because we're into the quantum computers and just the fact that everything is energy and actually everything is space is weird to realize that everything is empty, actually, empty space.
No, but it isn't. This is where Ian comes in. One of the last things Ian said in November 2011, before they took their first two-year break, was that energy is a meaningless word and doesn't apply to what's actually going on. So I'm saying how Ion updates the scientific enterprise and does more with less, like our drops and our food products.
So we're in a very weird situation because the words we have to explain in a scientific way, like what is matter, what is energy, it's like they don't even apply.
Right. The theories about science, Ian is against. He's not against the making of artifacts that scientists, real engineers do, and other people like us, me and Carol, know nothings, but we work with non-physical. And that gets into the point, you're saying that being a scientist is spiritual. So talk a bit about that.
They become now, they come to a point where, yeah, they see the connection of everything and how things, when they try to explain things, they really sound like New Age.
Yes, yeah. The ones we hear about, the Fritjof Capras, the Jack Sarfattis, the Carl Sagans, those ones end up talking Eastern Buddhism and spirituality. And it's not the spirituality that Ian recommends. Ian disagrees with every one of those guys that are forced to talk New Age because they don't have our stuff.
Yes, but the point is, like the big astronome Camille Flammarion realized that he was a very good friend of Kardec, you know, the guy that we saw his tomb in the Père Lachaise.
The guy who did the psychic research in the 19th century.
Yeah, the spiritualist.
Yeah.
And Camille Flammarion and Victor Hugo, that were really genius, were very close of Kardec, because this is the time when the coffee is emptying because the electricity is becoming an environment and there is all these change reactions. And many people are having these paranormal experiences, like Victor Hugo and Camille Flammarion had automatic writing. And
they were in the 19th century, Flammarion. I'm just saying the names in case people don't get what you're saying.
Yeah, he was like the first popular scientist. He wrote books for everybody about astronomy because he wanted people to know that there is no death and we're eternal. But he was a scientist, and he also wanted to show that what we call the paranormal and the woo-woo is actually science that we don't understand. But he really believed that there would be a time in which we could explain all these phenomena in a scientific way. Like these things will not be any more esoteric or occult or whatever you want to call them.
Right. So, hey, Roxy, let me respond to that. So these guys in the 19th century that did psychic stuff while being scientists, they were anticipating ion coming forth. But once ion came forth, ion didn't say, we're trying to be scientific. Ion didn't support, you know, crazy theories about what we might make. Ion just told us how to make the stuff. So we're working with non-physical, the early alchemy. That part of science, no one predicted. They had the idea of, well, maybe we could present in visually biased terms how life is eternal and we don't die. It's like a E equals MC squared formula. But, yeah, that's a nice statement. But once it's a given, what do? You work with non-physical.
Yes, some people, like the alchemists, sort of got that men can influence matter. And, you know, they were doing these experiments, and so people may do the same things, and they don't arrive to the transmutation, and others did. And I believe, like, Nicolas Flamel, you know, the guy.
Nicolas Flamel, yeah. We went to his restaurant.
Yeah, to the house.
In Paris.
That is now a restaurant.
Yes.
I believe he really did it.
Did the alchemical transmutation.
Yes, and he then built a church that became, like, very near the restaurant. There is the church. I think it's of St. John.
Mm-hmm.
That when he died, everybody almost destroyed his buildings looking for his secrets.
Yeah.
You know, because how come this little man, he was a scribe, was able to build churches, monuments, houses with stone? Like, only the king could do that. It was very expensive.
Right.
And he, when he was investigated, he said, well, because I am an alchemist, and he told a story in which he had a dream, and an angel showed him a book. And then in the waking world, somebody came and sold him the book of his dream, but it had these very weird alchemical drawings that
mm-hmm.
you cannot understand. So he decided to go into the path of the alchemist that started visiting the Cemetery of the Innocents, like we saw, because they believed you needed the help of the spirits to be able to get all the information on the path that is put on the buildings.
Right, in the Cemetery of the Innocents.
Yeah, the Cemetery of the Innocents is also in that area where we stayed.
Yeah.
But it doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
But, there are some pieces that were made by Flamel that are in a medieval museum in Paris. But so he decided to do the path from the darkness to the light, to go to Santiago de Compostela, and he did it. And it's really impressive to think that people will walk. And on the path, he met a Jewish guide, and they decided to decipher the book, but when they were coming back, the Jewish guy that was helping Nicolas Flamel died. But he had told him some information, and then he was able to understand the illustrations of the book, and he finally, with the help of his wife, that's very important, he was always saying that the wife was also very important.
Right.
They managed to decipher the book and transmutate metal into gold.
And are you saying this is the walk to Spain?
Yes, that was the first thing the alchemists had to do to be on the path. They had to go from the darkness to the light, and the light is because they will see then the sunset at the end of what they thought was the world.
Right, the sunset. And the walk started at the little Arc de Triomphe in front of your apartment where your sister and you stayed in Paris,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and that point was marked by an arc by Louis XIV. And then when I was doing all these things, you see, like, in the buildings and in the paintings, like the official paintings of Frank I, he has a lot of elements to show that he was into alchemy, like the three colors, the negredo, the rubedo, the...
Yeah.
In his paintings, he's only wearing those colors. And his logo is the salamander, which is very important in alchemy. And his slogan was Nutrisco et Extinguo, like he's working with fire, like the alchemist.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one is Louis XIV continues the work of Francis I. And in front of the Louvre, there is this equestrian statue of Louis XIV. He's riding a horse, a black horse, that is burning. Like, it is really weird because we don't even see these things, you know. Like, you just walk by.
Yeah.
But when you stop and see, it's like, the horse is